Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line from the great state of Ohio, Ben Golver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I am just savoring another fantastic performance by a role player, preserving the perfect postseason, hitting the biggest shot of his career, doing it in the face of the guy who has haunted him his entire life, doing it off the dribble, not within the Warriors system, as he got so much flack for back in January, doing it his way. Kevin Durant, it's time to celebrate him. I know you're ready to celebrate him too, right?
I am ready to celebrate
really?
Him. I honestly am. We're going to start off. We've got a decent amount of mailbag questions. We also are saving some others that are non-finals related, and we can get to those next week. But I'm going to start off with the lead from your column after last night's game.
That's not a good sign.
Ben Golver writes for Sports Illustrated, as the Warriors have crept closer to the championship that barely eluded them last year, winning game after game to arrive at their 15-0 postseason mark, a resentment towards Kevin Durant's arrival has arisen in some quarters. Feelings, whether angst over Durant's alleged disloyalty to Oklahoma City or frustration at Golden State's seemingly unfair collection of talent, have occasionally been expressed in a way that downplays Durant's role in his new team's success. You just subtweeted me in the lead of your finals column.
You're darn right. And it's not just you. It's these hundreds of listeners that I'm hearing from constantly in my emails. Look, you guys, and when I say you guys, I mean you and some of our SI coworkers and some of our listeners love to kind of like call me a robot or say that I'm able to, you know, distance myself from emotions, right? And I think this is one of these situations where people are analyzing Kevin Durant with their heart, not their mind. They're upset about his decision last summer. They're upset about what it could mean for the future of the league. They're upset about what it did to this postseason. And they're not just assessing what this guy's doing on the court. To me, the main story of this finals is Kevin Durant playing the best basketball of his career on the biggest stage in the most pressure he's ever faced, because even though people like to discount that, he's under a lot of pressure here. Like we said before this final started, he would have been by far the biggest loser if they don't win this final series. And he's delivering, and he's delivered 3 out of 3 games. You know, I was getting a little nervous on his behalf in game 3 because he was kind of quiet through 3 quarters. But he came on in the 4th quarter, 7-0 run to close it by himself. He outscored Cleveland 7-0 down the stretch there. And he hit that 3-pointer, which I think is really his first true iconic moment of his career.
Well, hold on. All right. So we're going to get to Durant. I feel like we should do 10 or 15 minutes on KD. Some people might be tired of it, but I think that's the most interesting part of this series, is not only Durant, but how Durant is being processed around the league and what this could mean and how much it means. And so I want to talk about all that. But first and foremost, you've been at these games, and I haven't been very jealous, honestly, until last night. Because last night, that was a finals game. Like, that's as good as it gets. I was pacing around my living room for the better part of the second half, especially that 4th quarter. I mean, what was it like in the building?
So before the game, like the buzz around the city, now granted, I got to the arena pretty darn early, but the buzz didn't really seem like it was there. Not really that shocking, given that they were down 2-0 and, you know, they're facing this team that's got a lot of talent. But I didn't really feel like the hope factor in Cleveland was necessarily at the same level of it as it was last year during the finals, or even just the excitement of the 2015 finals, because, you know, the first time they had been back in a while. But once the game started, the crowd was nuts. I mean, they were super duper loud the entire night. And a lot of it was just like LeBron and Kyrie trading chances to take them to the next level. You know, like these guys were hitting just tough shots, crazy shots. LeBron, you know, almost puts up a 40-point triple-double. A few moments there where like he goes down with the injury, so now he's back up. Everybody's cheering him with MVP chants. I mean, it was an electric atmosphere. And yeah. It all got away from them very quickly in those final minutes. And it felt a little bit like game six of the Western Conference Finals last year, where, you know, the Thunder kind of choked it away down the stretch. I don't know if it was really a choke job from Cleveland. I mean, Golden State played some excellent defense there. I mean, Andre Iguodala in the corner with that steal. You know, like we said, Durant hitting, you know, a couple tough shots there to kind of ice them away. But it went from like 15 out of 10, you know, on the decibel level chart to about a one in a span of like 3 minutes.
I can't imagine it. I can't imagine watching that game surrounded by 30,000 Cleveland fans, because that was, I mean, it was one of those things where I'm not really invested on either side here. And it was just heartbreaking to watch. Like it was hard to, because even as that fourth quarter unfolded, I was texting you and a couple other Sports Illustrated people saying I would still bet on the Warriors. And like the whole way, you could kind of sense that the Warriors were hanging right there. And as well as Cleveland played, I mean, that was as good as it gets if you're a Cavs fan, and they still couldn't put them away. And that, to me, the difference between this series and last series was clearest last night, because game three last year was the game that Kyrie and LeBron went nuts. And by halftime, it was kind of a blowout. And the Cavs just sort of put them away early, and they were too good. Like Golden State couldn't hang with them. And then last night, Kyrie and LeBron were even better than they were in any of the Cavs wins last year, and it just was not enough. And that's tough. That's the type of stuff where you sort of like step back and say, all right, well, like what can they even do from here? And we'll get to that, but it was wild to watch.
Yeah, when Iggy stripped LeBron in the corner and they went out of bounds and it was turnover, and that look on LeBron's face of like, oh my God, did that really just happen? Like, can I get a do-over? That was sort of the emoji face for the entire building during that last stretch.
Well, that's part of what makes the Warriors so unfair, you know? I mean, like, Klay went for 30 and was going nuts the first three quarters. Steph had like another quiet 30-point, essentially a triple-double. And then Durant goes nuts down the stretch. And then on top of that, you have Iguodala, one of the best defensive players of the last 10 years, just sort of hanging out, waiting to make like one of the biggest plays of the game at the end there. And I mean, that's just, it's a lot to deal with. And to go back to something you said earlier, I don't think it's a choke from the Cavs, because honestly, they held that lead longer than I expected. Like they were exhausted in that fourth quarter, and they kept finding ways to make plays. And it was like the offense was uglier than it had been through the first three quarters, and they were just sort of finding a way and extending the game, and it ultimately just wasn't quite enough.
Yeah, well, before game three, LeBron had been asked whether he was feeling tired late in the games because he was showing signs of fatigue earlier, and he answered kind of in a political answer, well, I'm averaging a triple-double. How could I be tired, right? And guess what, LeBron? Like, those things are not mutually exclusive. Like, you can average a triple-double and still be tired. And I was shocked. You know, there was a couple possessions late in the games where he's just standing off the ball, hands on his hips, watching Kyrie dribble. That is not what you normally expect to see, and I think he was just absolutely gassed. You know, Steve Kerr is constantly getting criticism for the minutes where Durant and Curry are not on the court together. He had some real dicey lineups early in the fourth quarter where, you know, Cleveland was starting to look like they might pull away a little bit, where he didn't have his best guys on the court. It really seemed like he waited a long time to bring them back. But boy, he was very quick to kind of toot his own horn, saying, well, it looks like, you know, them being rested down the stretch, you know, our stars being like, you know, not tired in the last couple of minutes really made the difference there.
Do you think Kerr is reading Warriors World Twitter?
Oh, 100%. I think he felt very validated in his moves. And, well, I mean, he still has to own the end of the last year's finals, though. I mean, it was kind of a similar situation he was trying to pull off and just didn't work. So I guess you got to give him credit when it works and hold him accountable when it doesn't. But one thing that Kerr said was it was their kind of toughest or most resolve they've shown in a game this season down the stretch. And yeah. Durant has this knock, especially over the last couple of years, of not being like a closeout guy, right? He had this reputation earlier in his career of being a big shot maker. But then in Oklahoma City, you know, he and Westbrook had so much struggles late in games where that kind of faded, and it almost became a negative where he was a guy you know, maybe couldn't trust, or he was too willing to settle. Do we have to kind of give Durant a little more credit here for being part of the reason why they had that resolve late? I mean, it seemed like he just had ice in his veins throughout that final stretch.
Yeah, I think we have to give the entire Warriors team credit because they all had ice in their veins over the final 8 minutes of that game. I mean, basically, every big shot from Cleveland felt like it was sort of the breaking point, and then the Warriors would just come down, and whether it was Clay or Steph, and then over the final 2 minutes, it was really Durant. But they just responded over and over and over again and made it look easy in a way that had to be demoralizing for the Cavs. And so, yeah, Durant gets credit, but they all get credit because that was the one question coming into the series is like, well, the Warriors probably won't play that many close games, but in close games, we have no idea how they're going to respond. And last night, they passed with flying colors.
Yeah, for sure. What I thought was actually funny was Durant kind of flipped the script on everybody, right? Like, we went back to the Christmas game. He was doing too much one-on-one stuff late. They were force-feeding him. It fell apart, turnovers. That was part of the reason why they lost. They didn't really run their offense. That famous Memphis game, Draymond screaming at him because he's not running the offense. He's doing too much one-on-one stuff. In the biggest moment of the biggest game of the season, Kevin Durant didn't run the offense. He came straight down the court and drained a three-pointer right on LeBron James' eye. We didn't hear too much criticism from Draymond or anybody else after that one, including myself. And I think it's sort of an example of the Warriors molded Kevin Durant. They supported him. They put him in a position to succeed at a much higher level than he ever has before. They didn't change him, right? They didn't fundamentally change who he is as a basketball player. He still has that kind of Kobe-like desire, that Mamba mentality, as Kyrie Irving would call it. To be the guy. Andre Iguodala said that. Tyronn Lue said that last night. They can kind of see that he wanted that opportunity and he delivered. Imagine the criticism had he missed that three-pointer, rushing into a three-pointer like that in that situation.
I don't, hold on.
There would
I
have been there would have,
no.
huge backlash.
No. Huge backlash. You've alluded to that a couple times. I don't think the stakes were that high for Durant on that three. The Warriors would have still been in control of the series, and they would have gone back to Golden State.
What are we talking about?
Five.
What are we talking about for the next 2 days, though? Right? I mean, come on. He would have been in the cooker. I'm not saying. Look, I understand what your point is. Don't manufacture drama. Don't over manufacture the drama. Right?
Yeah. Like
I get that. But
Durant was fine. He would have had 28 points instead of 31 points if he didn't make it. I think it is funny how much can change just because of one made shot. That's an interesting story. I mean, it's now suddenly it's KD's league a day later because of that jumper. But I mean, that's sort of the way basketball goes. So, but I don't know if there's that much more to the story than
well, I think that's
he is just a little bit too much to deal with on top of the rest of the Warriors.
I think that's easier to say from a distance. I think if you're KD and you miss that shot and now all you hear about is you're the new guy who screwed it up and you've got to spend the next 2 days answering questions about why didn't you run the offense? Why did you take the hero ball shot? Don't you know who's supposed to be, don't you know how you're supposed to be playing? Don't you know this is Steph's team? All that stuff was going to come back in full force if he had missed that shot. I'm not saying that they still lose the series. I'm not even saying that it goes six, right? It's just a much different situation here over the next 48 hours.
Yeah, I feel you. One more point on the game three itself. And you mentioned LeBron's fatigue. And I know that there are going to be a lot of casual fans, most of whom do not listen to this podcast. So this doesn't really apply to our listeners. But I already saw people bitching last night about the fatigue excuse for LeBron.
Oh, boy.
And I mean, it's just a sort of a reality of basketball that he's doing more work than anyone on the court and is wearing down. And it's not, I understand, like, I even understand why people might hear that and remember that LeBron rested more than anyone in the league this year and say, well, what the hell? What was all that rest for? Like, and the Cavs had 10 days off before the finals and all that. And they're two days between each game. But still, it's just what he's trying to do is basically impossible. And we're seeing the results of that. Like, he just can't quite finish some of these games, and I don't think it's bullshit. I have a pretty good detector for that, and I think that this is kind of a real thing. And Steve Kerr was telling the players that was going to happen, and was telling the Warriors, just keep running your sets, relax. They're going to wear down. You can't play one on one for 48 minutes and expect to be fresh at the end. And Kerr was right. And so I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there as a preemptive strike against all the sort of LeBron skepticism.
For sure. And look, I mean, his age is showing a little bit. You know, I think he's still adjusting where he's at. I mean, he's not old, but he's not where he was 3-4 years ago in terms of his wind. And then
I also don't know if anyone could do this. You know, like,
no.
I don't know if anyone could score 40 and guard Durant for 35 minutes. I mean, he's not guarding him the entire time, but like the two-way performance that we're asking of LeBron just to make these games competitive is pretty absurd.
Well, and especially at the pace they're playing too, right? I mean, I think that's a big part of it, is that there's this accumulative factor where over the course of a series that's being played significantly faster than these matchups have been played in the past. You can say you want to play fast. You could be the best player in the open court, like LeBron James is, and still not be ready to play 46 minutes at this diabolical pace, you know? And I thought that maybe they tried to mix it up at times in game three in terms of slowing things down, but you still saw the red flags, like their transition defense. I think that's really where it shows. Like, how many easy layups and dunks did they give up even late in the second half? Just because they're not prepared to play with Golden State in their style.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. This has been sort of a sobering series for LeBron. But now let's move to sort of the question of the hour. Let's do 10 minutes on Durant legacy. We've been sort of like dancing around it anyways through the start of this. But I'll start with this email from Greg. He says, the third game of the finals just ended. With about 3 minutes left, my stomach sank. I texted my friend, we're both rooting for the Cavs, and told him we're going to lose this game on transition threes in the waning minutes. And lo, it was so. Here's the thing. I'm not a complete LeBron homer, but when he and his talents went to South Beach, it seemed like the NBA basketball universe lost their collective shit. And for more than a hot second, it was a Sam's Club economy-sized tub of derision, hate, and schadenfreude. I mean, really, a colossal amount. We were slurping it down on a weekly basis that entire season. So Durant pulls something similar, but on an order of magnitude bigger, by joining the never-been-done-before historically great 73-win back-to-back finals Warriors. And it seems we all collectively shrugged. This Warriors team has been like watching a D1 college team trot around and wallop the turds out of a bunch of high school teams, not just in play, but in demeanor too, a sort of artificially manufactured bravado that rings tinny and specious because no matter what, they have more talent. So I have two more things to read here. The first one is a series of text messages from you earlier this week. So Ben writes, I truly didn't realize the depth of KD hate. Next text message. It's clouding so many people right now. Anyone can get 36, 8, and 8 in the finals? Oh, okay. I guess it was worse in 2012 with LeBron, but this stuff actually sickens me. And now one more thing. It really does. It really does bother you on like a philosophical level. And the final one is an excerpt from an article by Tom Ziller on SB Nation. He writes, the basketball world will grouse about Durant taking the easy way out just as they did in 2012 when LeBron won his first title with Miami. when Durant and the Warriors win another one, as our protagonist records memorable, glorious moments, the critiques will lessen. The complaints about how Durant orchestrated his career will continue to fade until they are footnotes, laments of a bygone era. Joining the Warriors allows us to appreciate Durant's excellence better than we ever could before, because on the Warriors, Durant is right in front of us all the time in full, undeniable glory. The excellence we see is far more visceral and memorable than the mechanics he used to get here. We'll remember the moments and eventually forget the Hamptons. So the Ziller excerpt there seems to be the prevailing sentiment among more enlightened basketball Twitter fans and media. And I take it that you agree.
Well, I'm not going to say, if we rewind it 2 weeks ago, that that was guaranteed to be how it went down. He had to prove it. He had to do it. You know, there was a scenario where he was this quote unquote glorified role player, where it's Steph's finals, Steph's the finals MVP, Draymond's captaining the defense, making all the biggest plays. And this does sort of get tainted, you know, in terms of KD's legacy. But I think he's wiped that out in his first three games, you know, and if they wind up sweeping, and he's going to be the finals MVP if they sweep. And the best moment of the entire series is him draining a three-pointer over LeBron, the guy that we've been setting up as, you know, the kind of obstacle that he needs to climb, you know, Mount LeBron, as we've called him, then people are going to remember those moments. They're going to remember that shot. They're going to remember his incredible defensive plays early in the series. And this is the finals that's going to go down as KD and the Warriors beat LeBron. The Warriors got revenge, but KD finally got over the top. That wasn't guaranteed. That wasn't necessarily going to be the story. But the way he's played, that's what the story is going to be. And going forward, as I've said previously, the more they win, the more individual accolades he gets, the more the criticism will fade.
Yeah. You know, the longer we've gone in this series, the more I'm agreeing with you. Uh-oh. And I've played the skeptic on KD for most of the last 2 months. And I totally understand the people like Greg, our first emailer in that sequence, who are like, this is bullshit. What is happening here? Why is everyone pretending this is normal? And it's not really normal. And it, like, KD got off easy because everyone felt guilty about how they reacted to LeBron. That is a fact. That the reaction was muted because everyone remembered how they processed the LeBron thing and how bad those opinions looked like 3 years later.
And he's not as good as LeBron. That's part of it too.
Well, he's in the same category in terms of talent.
No, but not in terms of like historical. I mean, there's no way we're going to be saying KD's a top two player challenging MJ. I don't ever see that happening.
Well, no, but I feel like if you're a potential top 20 player all time, like, and a perennial MVP guy, then it's all sort of half a dozen or wait, what's that saying? I don't know.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Yeah, I think I agree with you, but I think LeBron's got an exception. I think all, like, Steph, KD, all those guys are in the same kind of category when it comes to criticism. And I think LeBron has been in his own category of scrutiny, especially during the post-Kobe era. I mean, I think you could put Kobe maybe in that same level. To me, LeBron always gets it harder than everybody else.
Yeah, well, and to me, Durant should have gotten a lot more criticism than he did because the move was ridiculous and it still doesn't sit right with me. And I'm not sure, like, I'm not sure how anyone's going to view this a couple years from now, but I will say that what's been craziest about these finals is that Durant has been so good that you really can't say shit about his decision, because it's not just that he's winning a title, it's that he's turned the Warriors into like just a flat out nightmare. And we kind of knew that was what was happening, but it wasn't clear until he rendered LeBron so completely powerless.
Well, and look at Kerr's quotes last night. I mean, this was not something that I expected to hear him say during this run, given that Steph's still on the team, given that Draymond is still the emotional leader. He took over. This is Kerr speaking about Durant. You can tell he knows this is his moment. He's been an amazing player in this league for a long time, and I think he senses this is his time, his moment, his team. I mean, Steve Kerr's saying it, you know, and that's not even how he's really thought about the Warriors, right? Not as like one guy's team. And I think he tried to clarify a little bit what he meant, but I mean, the bottom line is game on the line. KD wanted the shot. KD took the shot.
Yeah. Well, and in game two, every time the Cavs got close, KD made a play to sort of put some distance between the Warriors and the Cavs. And that's how this series has gone, is that it would be close if not for Durant doing awesome things on the court. And like you mentioned that pull up, I've loved KD's game for like 10 years because I used to watch him in the summers in DC and playing like pickup ball around DC, like during the lockout. He was a kind of a fixture in that circuit of NBA guys who went up and down the East Coast playing pickup. And those were the shots that he would take and hit in all those like bullshit pickup games. And that's what I loved about his game, is that he was just ruthless. And we got to see some of that the year that Westbrook got hurt and Durant won MVP. Like, that's the version of Durant that I will always love most. But that was also what we saw last night. And I didn't think we were ever going to see that in Golden State, because I didn't think they needed that version of KD. And seeing it in these finals really does change the way I've processed it.
Yeah, neither did the Warriors, right? I mean, that's why they were preaching so much pass the ball, ball movement. It's just nice when you know you've got that in your pocket. And that's what I was trying to say, that they molded him, but they didn't change him. I mean, I think that guy was always there. This is why he was called the easy money sniper, right? And it's been a really interesting arc in terms of his late game reputation, because he was the go-to guy earlier in his career. And then last year and maybe a couple of postseason runs before that, things really ran the other way for him. It was like, you don't want it to bog down. You don't want him taking these tough contested shots. And it started to reflect on sort of his reliability. I mean, you remember that crazy headline the Oklahoman ran, but it wasn't just that headline. I mean, that one gets kind of all the talk, but that was a whole cloud around KD.
The headline that you're mentioning is Mr. Unreliable in the Oklahoman. And last night around 3 a.m., someone on Warriors Twitter mocked up a Mr. Reliable headline for the San Francisco Chronicle with a Durant Photoshop from Game 3. And that was probably the funniest thing I saw on Twitter afterwards. Gotta give Warriors fans credit. They are really good at talking trash, and they are genuinely funny. So I don't find any of their stuff obnoxious. I guess to finish the thought with KD, coming into this series, the way I thought this was going to go is that where LeBron was hit with all kinds of hate and resentment in that first year after the Heat, and then it sort of dissipated from there, especially as he won, I really thought that we were going to be in a situation where KD wasn't hit with that much criticism through the first year, even though in every interview he's done, he mentions criticism as if he's like some sort of martyr. But I figured that he would win and the resentment would sort of rise from there and people would come to really like loathe him. But I mean, he's been so awesome that all bets are off at this point. If he's going to play like this and the Warriors are going to be this good, then it's more just a spectacle that we're all going to kind of be amazed by for the next couple of years. And then we'll see where things stand in 2020.
Yeah. If I had to boil it down to one line, I would say it's this: criticize him for his decision, his motives, even his self-presentation after the decision as much as you like, but you also have to give him credit for how he stepped up here in the finals. You can't discount that. That's the one thing to me that's just above reproach, is his play here in the finals. And I think history is going to smile on him for that.
And they could have won without him, potentially. They could have won with him playing, averaging 16 or 17 a game, but that's just not the version that we're getting. We're getting a monstrous Durant series, and it's pretty crazy to watch. Anyways, I think we can declare this is the last time we're going to debate Durant's legacy and decision for at least until 2018. I think we need to declare this is like our the second iteration of the MVP debate.
Well, look, everybody's having it. I think we should. I just think it was kind of cathartic. I think that that three-pointer was a moment he was building
to. The three was awesome. Like I was losing my mind watching that. I literally had to sort of like take a couple deep breaths to process it.
It's just not a shot you see people take in that moment. And you made a good point. I mean, maybe he felt empowered to take that shot because they had such firm control of the series, because their defense had played so well on the other end, just because of the time score was kind of a 2-for-1 almost.
He also got to coast through the first three quarters while LeBron and Kyrie were killing themselves. But, true. You know.
Yeah, so there were circumstances that kind of led or contributed to his decision to shoot that shot. That's still a pretty wild decision.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. All right. Moving on here, let's run through some other questions. I had a question for you. What is more impressive? I feel like this is going to be a topic of debate over the next few days. 16-0 through the playoffs or 73-9 through the regular season?
Well, this is going to sound like super wet blanket of me, but I actually think 73-9 is more impressive just because of the injury issues of the teams that they faced. The 16-0 to me, it's always going to be colored a little bit by the Kawhi injury, or a lot by the Kawhi injury.
That's part of the legend. That's part of the stories we'll tell about this team is like, yeah, they could have been beaten, but you know, a couple things broke right for them.
Yeah, maybe. Or it's going to be like, well, they were 16-0, but really they lost game one of the West Finals.
Yeah, we'll be bitching about Zaza in 30 years. Okay.
Exactly. And then also, I mean, guys like George Hill, you know, Nurkic, I mean, there were some injuries along the way that, you know, could have potentially contributed to a loss. But 16-0 is insanely impressive. It's one of those, much like 73-9, where I didn't think it was going to happen even as it was unfolding. And I told you that multiple times over the course of this playoffs. No, it's not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. And now they're one game away from doing it. How do you plan to celebrate in terms of told you so's to me if they do go 16-0?
Yeah. I'm just really happy that you brought up Jusuf Nurkić as a potential X factor Warriors.
They only won game 3 by 6. People forget.
I know. People forget that the Blazers, like everyone mentions the Spurs game, but that Blazers game was also pretty close, about as close as anyone else has gotten until last night. Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I just think in context, like actually there are other 16-0 runs that might seem more impressive, but this one, the Warriors have so much more firepower than anyone else that it's hard to be that blown away. Whereas 73-9 last year, like the Warriors were incredible, but there were so many different games that they should have lost that they found a way to win that I will remember that season forever. Whereas 16-0 is more impressive as an idea than it's been in reality.
Yeah, what we should really do is start to say that they put together the best regular season ever and the best postseason ever, but it's still not as good cumulatively as the 96 Bulls. Because if you look at winning percentage, the 96 Bulls still are going to wind up having a higher winning percentage combined between regular season and postseason than the Warriors are this year. So what I'm saying is maybe next year we'll get the 74 wins plus the 16-0 postseason to really just answer every question, to just raise the bar that much higher.
Let me ask you something. Do we need to start a second secret podcast where you can share your like genuine, heartfelt Jordan takes?
Why did it sneak out there when I was talking about their winning percentage?
Like deep down, I know in your heart that you believe that no one can ever touch the 96 Bulls or Michael Jordan, and I love you for it. It's the closest you get to true fandom.
Well, look, let me, in my own defense from these accusations of emotion, can I read a few superlatives about these Warriors in terms of like where they're going to rack up historically Okay. If they do win game four, they will have the second best winning percentage of all time. If you combine regular season and postseason, only the Bulls are better. They will have most likely the best postseason point differential ever. First undefeated team to go through the postseason without a loss. They could potentially have the first pair of teammates to have a PER above 27 in the same postseason. So that's like a super high PER. We're talking like Jordan, LeBron, you know, all the best, but Barkley, like Hall of Famers get there. They could have two for the first time ever in the same postseason. They eliminated five All-Stars, if you count Hayward, Kawhi, which is asterisk, obviously, LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love. And there's actually a bunch of other All-Stars along the way, or at least former All-Stars, guys like Lillard, Aldridge, Gasol, Manu.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a stretch. That's a Manu, pretty...
Manu is a bit of a stretch, yes.
Well, I'd say Powell's a bigger stretch than Manu. Manu, you know, played pretty well in the Western Conference Finals. But yeah, the point is, this is a pretty strong case for the greatest team of all time. Like, even someone who defends the 96 Bulls to the death like I do would look at all of that. Oh, by the way, they're going to have most likely the second best offensive efficiency since 1984 among NBA champions. Only one team better, the 1987 Lakers. So like, if your offense is good as the Showtime Lakers, if you're more dominant than everybody, if you're undefeated, and if you're winning at a higher rate than anybody besides the 96 Bulls, that's a pretty good case for greatest team of all time, especially when you factor in, you know, prime LeBron as the finals opponent. If you sweep prime LeBron, that's definitely better than knocking out the Sonics in six games, right? So they've got a case if they do this.
They definitely have a case. Two responses to that. I made fun of you for mentioning their point differential as a potential motivating factor on earlier this week, that podcast, whatever. It's been a long finals. After we recorded, I remembered that last year when I spent some time with Steph, he actually mentioned, like, we did like a 10 or 15 minute interview, and then randomly we're in the same place sitting next to each other for an hour, all of which was like off the record. But I'll break that now. And he was like talking about the Spurs point differential versus the Warriors. So you were right.
I knew I was right the whole time. Look, they're always referencing stuff like that. And another thing that I noticed this week was they were all talking about their record in game threes in past postseason. So I went back to look it up, and they wrote my game three preview for me, because their game three performances under Steve Kerr have been like completely different than all of their performances in games 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, and 7, right? Like, game three was by far their weakest link, and they all knew it. They were all totally aware of it. The numbers checked it out when I went to go look. So these guys are going a lot deeper than you would expect. And you can also tell just from like how they handle matchups and adjustments. This is a very, very smart coaching staff, organization, and team. I mean, these guys are digging deep. They're not just going out there, throwing the ball out there and saying, let's go do this.
Yeah. Do you believe the Warriors when they say they haven't discussed 16-0?
Yeah, right. And I think Cleveland's beautiful, right? No. I don't know, though. I do not believe them. No, they've had that circle. You're talking about Draymond, guys like Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant. They're all killers. I mean,
They are killers. My theory, though, is that last year's finals was traumatic enough for them where they might be paranoid about like too much hubris in this scenario. So that, like, they might not want to mention it out loud. Like, 16-0 is clearly a motivating factor for these guys, but it might be one of those things that, like a perfect game, like, you don't talk about it.
Well, I think the only person to actually let it slip was Clay once, and people didn't really jump on it. I agree that Steve Kerr probably has not, like, circled 16-0 on the board throughout this run and said, hey, this is what we've got to go do, because that's unnecessary pressure. But think about it. When they're 12-0 coming out of the Western Conference Finals and they're staring down LeBron, don't you think that's like the number one thing on their mind is like, let's sweep this guy and really show him that we gave him that title last year?
Yeah.
That's got to be their mentality.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's definitely made it to the group chat. All right. two quick questions from here. We're going to save a couple other Warriors things because they're about to win the title. And we're going to talk a lot more about the Warriors. Alex in the Bay, though, asks, if the air conditioning unit had fallen on Kevin Durant during his press conference in Cleveland Tuesday, would it have been the biggest sports conspiracy theory of all time?
Yeah, I was waiting for people to make fun of him for leaving, but I did not blame him. Like, it was loud and really awkward. Like, I didn't necessarily feel super comfortable. Like, it kind of sounded like there was like a body rattling around inside of that thing. I don't know. I'm not saying that they need to like completely update their AC units there, but yeah, it was pretty shaky.
I think the better question, though, is if the Cavs had used an old air conditioning unit to try to take out KD, would anyone even blame them? Yeah. Like, all things considered, well, like, all right, yeah, you know,
call
you
got
to do what you got to do.
You had him for two games. That's fine. Call it even.
Jordan in Auburn asks, if Steph and KD end their careers with more rings than LeBron, how does it affect how we discuss their legacies?
That's a great question. I think this is where KD's decision does come back to bite him a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think he's going to be viewed as having, let's say he gets four rings. It's going to be a little bit of the Kobe situation where Kobe's got five, but the people who really want to nitpick say, well, Shaq won the first three, right?
Right.
I think it's going to be a similar thing where, like, you kind of shared them, you know, you get joint custody on the four rings with Steph.
Yeah, I think ultimately LeBron is going to be top three and Steph and KD will be somewhere in the top 20 all time. And they are both, and that's the way they should be. Like, I think big picture, that makes sense to me. So
I think KD has a chance probably to be higher than Steph. Some people might disagree with that, but he got started on a historic pace, especially in terms of his scoring earlier in his career than Steph did. And so he has a real chance, you know, on the all-time scoring chart to be super, super high. And I think that always influences people's, you know, perception. Like, let's say he gets up there and he passes Jordan on the scoring list, right? Which is definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
That's going to bump him above a guy like Steph, I think, from most people's perspective.
Okay. One more Warriors thing that I forgot. But this is from Waz. He says, Sharp, do you think Steph Curry is such a cool guy because every moment of his life is dedicated to becoming a meme or a YouTube clip? You seem to enjoy the eBaying, the Craigslisting, the Googling more than the average Joe. Shots fired from Waz. I don't even really know what that means, but I'm pretty offended. And if I'm giving off a Googling, eBaying vibe, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, you're a Googler. You're definitely a Googler.
Steph's ridiculous celebrations, pretending to play bowling and volleyball and warm-ups and tunnel shots were all nauseating, but I lost it when he had to put a towel over his face when he sat out game two. Cool, Steph. You made the internet again. Can 1950s Golliver call out Steph's insecure need for internet attention, or are we all just going to keep playing along here? I don't know, man. I think people need to chill out on the Steph Curry reactions.
Well, this is what I was trying to say. That email was written with the heart, not the mind, okay? I think we can agree on that, right?
Look, I just think that I applaud anytime a guy is talking trash, and some of Steph's celebrations are a little bit corny. I will 100% agree with that. But the towel over the face thing, that wasn't even trash talk. Like, he's had a towel over his head on the sideline every single time. And if I were famous enough to wear like any sort of, there were cameras on me at all times, and anything I said could potentially go viral via lip reading, I would always have a towel on my face. I'm pretty sure that's what all that was about.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was, why he was lying down. That was kind of strange, but he does really, I mean, he's leaning far, far into it. You know, I probably blame Riley Curry for all of this. I mean, that seems like the turning point for him.
That was definitely like the turning point for the internet. Too much Riley.
Yeah, but I mean, we should be praising Steph here too. I mean, I thought he had a understated but excellent game three. His rebounding, you know, Russell Westbrook could learn a thing or two about rebounding from Steph Curry, the way he takes rebounds in traffic.
He came up with some big ones, man.
Yeah, and smart decisions. I thought he played a much smarter game than game two. Steady. And, you know, he didn't, I mean, it goes back to his personality in terms of welcoming Durant. Like, there wasn't the resentment factor when KD's doing things one-on-one down the stretch, right? Like, he's okay with it. They're still competing as a team. He's not checking out. There's different stars who wouldn't be able to do it quite that way. And I would say I don't love Steph's goofiness, like the high kick. Everybody got really excited about the high kick, I think, in game one. To me, it's just kind of white noise at this point. But he's had a lot to celebrate here over the last 3 years. The fact that he can continue to come up with new ways to celebrate is actually kind of impressive.
Yeah, well, I appreciate people's... But I appreciate the backlash against some of Steph's celebrations because some of them are corny and he deserves to be criticized. The only I draw the line when we start complaining about the towel over his face. I've seen like dozens of superstars lie on the court and get worked on and just like that was a Kobe move. That was a Steve Nash move. It's not like Steph trying to show up the Cavs. And LeBron shows up teams all the time. He did that throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. Like that was the theme of the last 2 months. So anyways, chill. But I appreciate the email because I still have no idea what eBaying, Craigslisting, and Googling type of guy means. But all right,
I think
let's finish out
creep.
Here. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what that means. We should finish out here. And we have, I don't know, we have a lot of different Cavs questions. Mark asked, excluding all current Warriors, what players in the league would make the Cavs an instant favorite if added to their team? The short answer is no one. I think they could add anybody and it wouldn't be as good of a fit as what Golden State has. If I were picking one player to add, it would be Giannis, because Giannis has traditionally harassed Draymond, and he and Durant are the only two guys in the league who can like really neutralize him, but that's all not going to happen. So in the real world, I have two, we're ignoring all the Cavs questions. I have two questions. Is there any way for the Cavs to level the playing field or make this more competitive by next year? And is LeBron leaving in a year plus, like 13 months?
Well, in the dream world, I think Kawhi is the best addition for them. In the reality world, I think the best chance they have to challenge Golden State in next year's finals is to try to trade for Paul George. I mean, Paul George is the guy who addresses their biggest weakness right now. They need to have a matchup option for KD, like Shumpert and Richard Jefferson. That's not going to cut it. As good as Kevin Love was in games one and two, I don't think he's a guy who's like a game-changing presence in this series. I think you basically need to be able to save LeBron as much as possible and then have somebody who you can just really sick on Durant, who's also a secondary scoring threat, which Paul George is. I really like this idea of Love for George. I know it's been floating around. I think it makes sense for both teams. If I'm Indiana, they've been real hesitant to want to do the full-scale rebuild. I think Kevin Love fits nicely with Miles Turner. That's a pretty solid 4-5 combination. You know, it fits modern style, good spacing.
Hold on.
And you've got Love under contract for multiple years. You know you're going to lose George. I mean, he wants out. If you're Cleveland, it's worth it because, you know, you're all in. You've got to do it. And you've got to sell to LeBron that you're trying to win a title every year because there is that flight risk down the road.
Yeah. So the Love for Paul George thing is realistic if we're assuming that the Pacers are stupid, right?
No, come on.
Well, hold on. I mean, they could do better in a rebuild. Like they could.
But do they want to rebuild? That's the thing. I mean, their mentality has never been let's
right.
completely tear it down.
So stupid isn't the word. If we're assuming that the Pacers have low expectations for themselves and are happy with a 6 or 7 seed.
If they're trying to put a competitive product on the court and keep their fan base engaged is the better way to put it.
Okay, yeah, that's true. basketball in Indiana is really in a perilous state. They have to be very careful. No, I'm 100% with you on trading Love. I think one of the things that's most, like, it would frustrate me as a Cavs fan, and it frustrates me as a basketball fan, is that Love is this superstar player, and every time they play the Warriors, he turns into this like ragtag guy that the internet is pulling for to just, you know, make the intangible plays and find ways to contribute. And it's just really depressing to watch, especially since it sort of affects the way LeBron and Kyrie can hang in this series. And if you're the Cavs, as well as Love has played, and I think that the Love for Wiggins deal is still was still the right move, I think now is the time you sort of have to move on, because that it's clear that the Warriors are the only team that matter, and Love's just a bad matchup in that department. I just don't think that the Paul George thing is realistic, because the other thing is they can keep him around this year and basically bank on him making all NBA, which would be put the media in a crazy position, but that's a decent gamble, right?
It's a big risk, though, because if he leaves for nothing, you know, you're up the creek. If I'm Indiana, I'm trying to trade him this summer, period.
Yeah, well, you're right on that.
Your point about can you get a better package, you know, picks and young assets, is a good one. It just comes down to what their priority as an organization is. I just think Kevin Love, face of a franchise, I mean, he can do a lot more, obviously, as number one guy. He'd put up the numbers. He'd fill seats, sell jerseys. I mean, there's some real positives there if you're Indiana.
Yeah, it's wild how much has changed in the span of like a little more than a week here. Like last week, I was on a radio show, and one of the hosts asked me, if you're the Cavs and you lose this series, do you blow it up? And like, I laughed at the question. But here we are. Everything is kind of on the table, because the LeBron thing is out there, though.
Yeah, that's still a ways away, though. And I mean, let's give credit to LeBron. It could be a lot worse, right? I mean, we could really be having this conversation if he hadn't taken a multiple year deal to kind of give them that extra year of breathing room. So, yes,
yeah.
I think a year off in the distance, we now have to think about what LeBron's future is. It's also weird that the Cavaliers don't have their GM situation locked up going forward. I mean, that's certainly strange, especially because you need to consider potentially busting up this, you know, core big three that they've got. You would like to know who's going to be making that decision. But I don't think we need to be panicking and saying, oh, this whole thing is broken. I mean, LeBron and Kyrie both were magnificent last night. J.R. Smith came back to play. You know, he didn't look completely useless. And they got some nice, you know, contributions from some of their other pickups, guys like Kyle Korver, too. So,
no,
I think the blow-up talk is crazy.
Yeah, the blow-up talk is crazy, but it is also fair to say that, like, things could look different in 2 years. And I sort of knew that we were going to be having some of these discussions, and I've had some of these discussions earlier in the year too. But it's kind of wild to see it all sort of start to play out in reality. And the LeBron thing, like I wrote about this today, the craziest part to me is that I'm not sure what he can do to counter this team. And it basically anytime over the past 10 years, anytime he's tried to do anything, the entire league has sort of held its breath and waited to see what he's going to do. And it orbits around him, you know? And now I don't know if that's true anymore. I think Durant has kind of unleashed a monster in Golden State to where no matter what, everyone is planning around the Warriors, and LeBron is kind of a secondary story.
This is a point I made about a week or two ago, where I said, you can strip everything else away from Kevin Durant's decision. Ultimately, he chose the team that gave him the best chance to beat LeBron, right?
Yeah.
I think now you have to look, when you're gauging LeBron's future, will he view things in the same way, but in reverse? Which team gives him the best chance to beat Durant? Shouldn't San Antonio be in that conversation?
Man, I hit you up yesterday morning about this. It's out there. Like, that's the one team. It's funny because LeBron will catch heat if he leaves. But then again, if the Warriors are just running through the league like this, I think everyone's going to be so pissed off at the Warriors that people would cheer LeBron wherever he went if he were on a quest to take down KD and Steph. But the one team where he would be most insulated from criticism leaving Cleveland a second time would be the Spurs. And the Spurs are currently flirting with Chris Paul, and it would be pretty wild to see CP3, Kawhi, and LeBron down in San Antonio. LeBron will probably have to sign for like $5 million. I don't know if he'd do that, but it would be that's out there and is a genuine possibility.
Yeah, I would just hate to see what the Spurs do to LeBron's personality because he's been so good quotes-wise. But maybe there would be this two-man race between Popovich and LeBron of who could give the better quotes. I mean, maybe that's how it would play out and we'd really get lucky. Or, you know, maybe LeBron would do all the speaking on behalf of Kawhi and it would still, you know, he'd still be able to stay who he is. But, I mean, if that's the question, which team gives you the best chance to beat the Warriors? I think the answer is any team that has Popovich as the coach and Kawhi as the Durant stopper. And, you know, Chris Paul is in or out, right? But to me, if I'm LeBron, that's a calculation.
Again, they might not even need Chris Paul. They have DeJounte Murray. Your big three is DeJounte, Kawhi, and LeBron, and you're set. The other thing that was thrown out yesterday by Kevin O'Connor and Bill Simmons on their pod was the Lakers. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll leave it there.
You don't know, so you're not ready. Look, it's 3-0. There's no analysis to do with the actual finals. You're not ready to just sort of spitball here.
No, I mean, I see the wheels turning. I see why that makes sense for a lot of people, but does that make sense for LeBron? I mean, I don't see how the Lakers are in a position to challenge.
That's a great way to explain it.
I don't see are the Lakers in a position to challenge Golden State? I think that's going to be his motivating factor, right? If it's not home, it's going to be winning, right? I mean, those are kind of the two things that have always mattered to him. And I don't think the Lakers provide either. But, you know, maybe they have four guys simultaneously hit a crazy breakthrough and they're going to look a lot brighter next season, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm a big Brandon Ingram believer, but I don't know if I'm ready to count him as a factor in the 2018 title race.
Something tells me Kawhi is going to be better in 2 years than Brandon Ingram. Just a hunch.
Well, and it's also, I've heard people over the course of the season, I heard a couple things about LeBron. I never really heard any Lakers talk. And it's kind of crazy to think about that. But it also, I mean, he does have the house in LA. Like, I could see the outlines of LeBron in LA. And especially if they get Paul George, who is not quite as good as Kawhi, but you settle for like a B+ Kawhi if the trade-off is life in LA versus life in San Antonio. Is that fair?
The scenario with the Lakers makes more sense to me if like LeBron's deciding that his career is just about over, right? Like that's the place that you ride off into the sunset. You kind of transition into your post-NBA life. Like if he comes up on the end of his next contract and he's like, okay, I want to play two more years. I'll sign a two-year deal in LA and that's where I'm going to kind of fade out. Where he's admitted to himself that the title window has closed, then I could kind of see it. I just don't see any scenario where he still believes he's like, you know, a top five player in the league where he's going to go to anything approaching that level of dysfunction and, you know, rebuilding roster.
Well, the title window, it may not be closed, but it definitely looks closer to being closed this week than it ever has before.
Yeah, but that's overdoing it, though. I mean, one injury, you know, and we saw that with the Durant thing. I mean, as long as you're in the mix, and I certainly, that's why I wouldn't completely blow it up next year if I was Cleveland, because, you know, injuries can change everything. You want to be right there. If you can get Paul George and match up better, do it for sure. But otherwise, I don't think there's a huge shame in just rolling it back with most of this group.
Yeah, that's true. The last two things we'll say on this, and honestly, after the last 2 weeks of like just take overload and legacy discussion and everything else, I don't have the energy to really shift into LeBron speculation mode. So that's why we're limiting this to 10 minutes at the end of a podcast. But the one team, it's nice to have a superstar potentially available, and the Celtics are just 1,000% out. because there is no way in hell that LeBron James would ever go to Boston.
That's a good point. We don't have to listen to Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, and a first-round pick for LeBron pod, thank God.
He is not signing up to play with those fans.
Can Danny do it? Can Danny do it?
Can Danny pull it off? How many Nets picks will it take? Last point, though. LeBron's agent, Rich Paul, also reps John Wall. LeBron, I don't know how to put this, but... DC is a possibility, right?
Oh, come on.
I honestly couldn't even get that out with a straight face, but, you know, I tried.
There's a better chance that LeBron James is president of the United States than ever plays for the Washington Wizards.
Yeah, I'm pretty upset. I should have sold that better. But it's time to move on. We will be back. I actually don't know what our recording schedule is, but the Warriors are going to win the title in the next 4 days, one way or another. So, for now, just enjoy in Ohio, man.
Yeah, no doubt. Game 4 is Friday. It could be the second time the Warriors close in Cleveland. They can get that champagne smelling in the locker room like they did a couple years ago. Remember that famous quote? I have a sense that they're going to do it. I mean, what's your prediction for Game 4? I think it's going to be a sizable Golden State win. I think Cleveland, you know, like LeBron said, he left it out on the court. You know, he looked gassed, you know, emotionally as well. I feel like that was their shot in Game 3.
So keep in mind, we opened this season by you asking me for predictions before Warriors Spurs, and I predicted that the Warriors would win by like 25 points, and that did not happen. So I'm not gonna like go too hard on the Warriors here. I think they'll win. It could absolutely be a blowout, but Cleveland's gonna show up more than people expect, I think.
I like that. That's good. Yeah, Golden State's also really slammed the door hard in its first three series too. So, you know, that's something else to look out for is, you know, eye of the tiger type thing where they're closing in on it.
I'm mainly being careful because I want this series to be over. So I'm not going to jinx the Warriors. Just please finish it on Friday.
Hey, let's double back real quick, like 10 seconds. Does KD cry now that we've seen how this finals has played out? Because we both doubted that he would cry, right?
No, we didn't both doubt that he would cry. You opened up a podcast like a month ago asking me whether I thought KD would cry out of the blue. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't know if he's going to cry. I honestly still haven't thought about it. But what are your odds for this?
I don't know. I still don't think he's going to cry. I think this is going to be a celebration. I'm seeing lots of bouncing up and down. I'm seeing lots of towel waving. I'm dubious on the tears, but you know why I asked that question, right?
Why?
Well, just because, like, how much does it mean? You know, and that's the crux of this whole conversation about KD is like, you know, is this going to mean as much to him as it would have in Oklahoma City, or as much as it meant to LeBron to win one in Cleveland? And that is the only way I can really see that you can kind of still get at KD is like, yes, you won, but it wasn't as deep to you as you might have thought.
Yeah, I think it is absolutely as deep to him as it ever would have been. But
so he's going to be in tears. He's going to be just melting.
Maybe, man. I don't know where the tears come into it. I don't know how to account for the tears. But I now can't wait to see the aftermath. That's going to be the first thing we open with on the next pod.
There is one X factor here, too, because his mom's been at all the games, right? It's going to be hard. If she's crying and they're hugging, waterworks.
There you go.
Here it comes.
All right. A couple final thoughts or final notes here. Number one, 5-star reviews, as Ben says every week.
Yes.
We really appreciate it. They help the podcast in iTunes and whatever weird algorithm they have. So shout out to everyone who sent in a review. If you haven't, hit us up. Number two, openfloormail@gmail.com. Hit us with questions about the rest of the league. No matter what happens over the next few days, our next podcast is going to be at least 50% nonsense from the rest of basketball, because I want to talk about the Sixers and I want to talk about the Kings, but like draft, we're going to go all over the map there. So hit us up. And beyond that, Ben, have a great time in Ohio. I haven't gotten any good Ohio Instagrams from you, so please get to work over the next couple days.
No, that's not a me thing, okay? I've been looking. I went on a search actually for the bald eagle, Great American Bald Eagle.
That's not a me thing. That's an Ohio thing.
I went on a search for the Great American Bald Eagle yesterday before game three. Came up empty. I left it all out there on the Lake Erie Bluffs, though. Anyway, yeah. Andrew, 5-star reviews, openfloormail@gmail.com. Until next time, I'll talk to you.
All right, man. Take it easy.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.